Eric Bogosian from Uncut Gems. What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And today we are celebrating My Bloody Valentine's Day. Yes, just like last year on this week. I guess it's, I don't know how that would actually line up. We are talking exclusively about shoegaze records. What did we talk about last year? It was Wild Honey and Slow Dive? Yeah. And I guess one of the ideas behind doing this is there are so many other genres of music that are not necessarily punk, but they do tangentially inform or influence bands in the punk genre.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, alternative rock and indie rock and shoegaze and all kinds of genres really came out of punk scenes and kind of mimicked the punk ethos and to get started. And so, I don't know, they fall under the umbrella, but they don't show up on the genre charts. So,
yeah, and like so much of DIY today, or at least in the last 5 years, either came out of the punk scene, so much of the DIY scene is shoegaze, and it did come out of the punk scene. Like, typically it was like punks and emo kids, like, who just started playing shoegaze. And, so there's definitely that connection there, and we kind of wanted to like pay a little bit of homage to a genre that we like but maybe don't know a ton about. Like, I wouldn't call myself like what do shoegaze fans call themselves?
Shoegazers? I don't know.
I guess like
what are the lace codes for shoegaze?
What is that all about? I'm like not seeing any of that stuff.
By the time this episode goes up, it will have passed, but it's kids posting about if you lace your Doc Martens with these certain color laces, it means you're like a neo-Nazi or you've killed a cop or whatever. So people are just like making fun of these like 19-year-olds who are like just discovering lace code.
That's so funny. I guess, yeah, every like 19-year-old learns it around the same time, but it's just so weird when it becomes like part of the larger discussion. So what should we what color should we lace our shoes while we're looking at our pedal boards? I'm trying to connect it to your shoegaze. Shoelace code gaze. So, we normally like to look at the Rate Your Music charts for the year of whatever albums we get, and since we're not doing a specific year on this episode, we decided we could take a look at the overall shoegaze charts on Rate Your Music, and it's weird.
Yeah.
Turns out no one knows what shoegaze is.
Right. Even though there is, like, a definitive span of years and, like, four bands that you can compare everything to, and like it either sounds like My Bloody Valentine, Slow Dive, Swerve Driver, or Ride. And if it doesn't sound like any of those bands, maybe it's not shoegaze. Maybe it's just influenced by shoegaze.
Yeah. So number one and number two on the shoegaze chart make the most sense in the world. My Bloody Valentine's Loveless, and then Slow Dive Souvlaki. Like two quintessential shoegaze. Hey, these shoegaze records is great.
Shoegaze.
These two quintessential shoegaze records by the two of the architects, I guess, of the genre. But then Rate Your Music does weird shit, like puts a glitch pop IDM group at number three.
Yeah, and our friends have a nice life.
There they are.
Really just like a cold wave post-punk sort of industrial sounding band. I don't get the shoegaze tag. I don't think it applies, but it's one of those records that I think you can tie very closely to maybe what we were discussing before we started recording, where the thread gets lost in the 2000s, where people started saying, like, Heisu is shoegaze. Mm-hmm. It's like, they're a sludge band.
Yeah. With, like, industrial aspects, because he was in Godflesh.
Yeah, right. Right. It's like, the lineage to Heisu is so direct. It's like Sabbath to, like, Hawkwind to, what, like, The Obsessed. I'm trying to think of more traditional doom bands in the 80s. Maybe, like, goth rock. Like, I feel like they pick up so much along the way. And then, and no wave and industrial. And those definitely are huge influences into, like, drone and drone metal and everything in the metal world.
But that's
the brown pants metal world.
Yeah, but that's also the difference. It comes to that sound from a metal direction. So it's not shoegaze. Like, yeah. You're not calling Sun or Earth a shoegaze band. They have pedals, you know, they have weird guitars. They have, I don't know. Like, Boris has psychedelic elements, but I don't think you would really ever call Boris a shoegaze band. I don't know what you would call Boris. Sometimes they're a Japanese hardcore band. Sometimes they're a stoner rock band. Then they do, like, dream pop records. I would even say maybe the dream pop records are the closest you get to shoegaze with them. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. So anyway, we prescribe to a pretty narrow definition of shoegaze.
But apparently Rate Your Music does not.
No. I mean, and it's nerds on the internet. They hear some spacey texture and they say, oh, this is like shoegaze.
It's like that meme with the guy standing there, the anime guy standing there, and the butterfly comes down, and it's just like, yeah, texture space guitars, and the guy goes, is this shoegaze? I'm forming a meme out of words, but
you get the picture.
Yeah. Well, you don't. That's what. On page 2, number 44 is Silver Sun Pickups with their album Carnivus. Are they a shoegaze band? I don't think they are. They're an alternative rock band with some shoegaze elements. They want to be Smashing Pumpkins.
Right. And that's a thing. That's totally a thing. People always want to call early Smashing Pumpkins shoegaze.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's not.
They want to give Smashing Pumpkins more cred than they actually deserve.
I mean, they were influenced by, like, psych rock. Sure.
I mean, I'm sure they were listening to My Bloody Valentine when they made Siamese Dream. But that record doesn't sound that much like... I mean, it's mostly grunge. That's what Smashing Pumpkins are. Oh, wow, there's a compilation at number 54. What are y'all doing on here? It's a Japanese compilation that's main genre is shoegaze and secondary genre is J-pop.
Okay, sure.
I've never listened to any of these bands, so I can't say that if it is or isn't, but just odd that it would be so highly rated. Yeah, I'm, like, scrolling through, and there's a lot of groups I don't even know.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's new gaze.
Yeah, like, I know who Dive are, and I know who Avlov are. Like, we all know who fucking Were is. But is the Brian Jonestown Massacre?
Well, I know who they are, but...
But are they a shoegaze? They're not a shoegaze band. They're, like, one of those weird blues punk bands, aren't they?
No. I mean, their first record was in 95. I think they're probably more on, like, a psych rock. Because, I mean, by 95, Swerve Driver and Ride were turning into, like, alt-rock bands. My Bloody Valentine was done. Slowdive was pretty much just turning into post-rock by the end of the 90s.
Well, they just turned into Mojave 3.
Right.
Which I'd rather listen to Mojave 3 than Slowdive, but...
Yeah. Well, anyway...
Yeah, I'm just, like, trying to find some of the newer groups. Like, okay, here's West Cust. Like, they are a new gaze with an umlaut band that you can trace directly to Slowdive and Swerve Driver as, like, influences. Like, I don't think 100th count as a shoegaze band, but for some reason they're on here.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the whole title fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Conundrum.
like, okay, there's Pity Stacks. They're number 152. So that's exactly what helps muddy the waters. Like, they definitely came from the emo scene, because their secondary genre is Midwestern emo. They are on, like, one of those emo labels, like, they were on Run for Cover when that record came out. So it's like, is it shoegaze? They might be. I'd give them more credit than some of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like Cloakroom.
Yeah. Cloakroom are weird. Like,
this is really more influenced by, like, slowcore, like Pedro and Red House Painters and Low.
Yeah.
With, like, a little bit of hum. Well, do we want to keep parsing down the...
Yeah.
Many misinterpretations of shoegaze, or... Are we gonna talk about a record that pretty much immediately muddies the water?
Yeah, let's jump into it. So we got number 68 on the shoegaze album charts, and it is Chapter House and their album Whirlpool. They are from Reading, Berkshire, England. I don't do that when there's guests on, but I do that when it's just us. So if you never want me to do that again, come be a guest. Chapter House formed in 1987. This was released on April 29th, 1991 on Dedicated Records, who also released albums by Spiritualized and Spaceman 3. Those are probably the biggest artists I could find on there. The personnel on this record is Russell Barrett on bass, Ashley Bates on drum, Simon Rowe on guitar, Andrew Sheriff on guitar and vocals, and Stephen Patman on guitar and vocals. And this album features guest vocals by Rachel Goswell from Slowdive and Mojave 3, and Simon would later join Mojave 3 as well. And the album was produced by the band, with some tracks by Ralph Jezzard and Robin Guthrie of the Cocteau Twins. So, what did you think of this record?
I like it. My favorite songs are probably the least shoegaze songs. So, it's the baggy sounding stuff. I like that. I like the Madchester, like, breakbeat drumming and...
So I was assuming when you said that it muddies the water, if that the baggy and Madchester aspects were what you were specifically referencing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I see that, but also Ride had a little bit of that too.
Mm-hmm.
And Ride are pretty much, you know, one of the Mount Rushmore of shoegaze, so they're the Teddy Roosevelt, I guess, but the one who you're like, should they be there? But I guess so. But, yeah, I mean, well, this record did come out in 1991, so almost all British alternative music had that weird, dancey Madchester sound. Like, it's almost an electronic, like an EDM-style, like, beat that they all have. Because, like, even if you listen to, like, some Stone Roses from this time period, like, they're doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Velvet Underground with dance drums.
Mm-hmm. And there was also just a lot of, like, psychedelic-inspired music in that time period, too.
Right. And, you know, that's a thread, you know, considered a major influence on shoegaze as a genre. But I think, I don't know, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of things kind of all percolated at one time in the UK in the late 80s and early 90s. And that's primarily what we call shoegaze. So I do think that this one fits, even if it has some outlying elements.
Yeah, Robin Guthrie, like, produced some involvement tracks
with the production on this record, and that definitely shows. There are some very, very shimmery Cocteau Twins sounding guitars on a lot of these songs.
Yeah, it's interesting because it kicks off with probably the best song on the album, "Breather." It's like one of the faster paced songs, and it was definitely more in the Swerve Driver and Ride vein than the My Bloody Valentine and Slow Dive speed. But then they immediately follow it up with Pearl, which has Rachel from Slow Dive on it, and it's a dreamier track. But even though that song does have like a really, really strong Madchester beat in it,
yeah, Pearl's one of my favorite songs on the record.
Yeah,
it's super catchy. I think it's just genuinely a well-written song, and I think it could be interpreted in a lot of different ways. I don't think it's just their pedal board and, you know, the production of the record that makes it, which is, I think, the downfall of a lot of shoegaze. Yeah, I mean, even then and now, too much emphasis on the texture and not enough on the writing. But did you hear, I think my other favorite song on the record was track 5, Falling Down. When you listened to this, were you also racking your brain trying to figure out what song it sounds like?
No.
It's got that little wah-wah echo riff.
Like, oh, oh.
Wow, wow.
Yeah, it does have a... What was that? I do remember thinking, it's like, this riff sounds very familiar, but I couldn't figure out who it was. I was like, what is this, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers or something?
No, it sounds almost identical to... hold on, let me make sure I have the right song title, because there were like 5 singles from this record. Of course, I have an ad. Yeah, it's it was bugging me, and so I looked up the specific song, and I found someone on Reddit who posted it, just like in like the shoegaze subreddit or something, and someone commented, "It sounds exactly like Mysterious Ways by U2.
Well, now I need to pull that up myself to see.
I was like, holy shit, it really does. Like, it's just the timing of the beat and the key that it's in and that wah guitar riff that, like, is the center of the whole song.
Wow, wow. Wow. Yeah. It really does have that.
Which, that song, Mysterious Ways, was on the album Octang Baby, which was also released in 1991. And that's where they started borrowing a lot from electronic music. And I was wondering, like, did they steal that idea? Did they hear this Chapter House?
Well, what month did this come out? Song? What did I say? April? Yeah. So what month did that U2 record come out then?
It came out in November of 91. And they were working on it all the way up to September. And the thing is that song by Chapter House was released on the EP Free Fall in 1990.
Huh.
So I would not be shocked if The Edge heard that song and was just like, oh, let's do a riff like that. And they just, like, completely ripped him off.
Yeah, because listening to this, I could totally imagine Bono's vocals over that track.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't actually even tell you what the vocals sound like in that song, because it's probably just very hushed. Two singers on this record, but I don't know which one's doing what at any time, because they both sound the same. Steve and Patman and Andrew Sheriff. Patman and the Sheriff. I mean, this is an interesting record. Did you listen to all of the bonus material as well?
I want to say I probably did.
Because on the Spotify version has many, many, many more songs that are actually on the full length. Only the first 9 songs are actually part of the record. And Chapter House didn't release a ton of music. They have, I want to say they have 2 full-length albums. Yeah, the reissue has 7 extra tracks. And it's basically just the Free Fall EP, the Sunburst EP, and the Pearl EP. They only had 2 albums. They had another one that came out in 1993 called Blood Music, which I didn't actually sample at all to see what they sounded like by that point.
I heard a little bit. It's a little more dancey. It's a little more like probably what Britpop was doing in the 90s, late 90s, well, 93.
Yeah, I mean, that's
what I heard from it. I didn't care for as much. It definitely stripped away a lot of the shoegaze.
Yeah, I mean, that record's not even on Spotify.
It is.
Is it? Not? Is it?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought I didn't see it. Does it have different artwork? Oh, there it is. Then I'm, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's different. It's very different. It does, yeah, it's doing the more Britpop thing, which is, you know, where Oasis came from. So, and you can hear that very clearly when you sample it. Yeah, is this a good record, though? I mean, we've talked about songs that we liked, but do you think the album as a whole is good?
I'd say it's good, but not great. We can go ahead and give it our ratings. I mean, honestly. I gave it a 3.5, maybe a 3.7, but it's enjoyable to listen to from beginning to end, and I didn't feel like skipping anything, and there was nothing actively bothering me or annoying me about it. But there's a lot of material here that is just background noise and not really engaging. So I don't think it's a great record overall. It's something that you can easily extract a handful of songs from and just listen to those exclusively. But if you're going to do that and you have the time, it doesn't hurt to just listen to the whole record, I feel like.
Yeah, it's with just like the 9 tracks, it's maybe a 35-minute album, so it's not terribly long. For shoegaze, I think that's pretty good. Though, I don't know, I can't think of too many times where shoegaze was like really overreaching as far as like patience. The songs themselves are kind of long, but they don't tend to have, whenever if they have a bunch of long songs, they don't tend to have a more than like 7 or 8 songs on the record. So like, it's not like a 13-track album, but it's like 55 minutes long or anything like that, which you could very easily do with this style of music. But they understand that not everybody wants to listen to a 55-minute record all the time with very similar elements throughout. So I can't think of too many shoegaze albums I've listened to where I was just like, this is too long. I'm sure they're out there, but I'd give it a 3.75. I think the first two songs are so strong that it really like boosts the album up. I was reading a review that talked about how they made the mistake of putting the song Auto Sleeper at track 3 because it kind of like kills the momentum that the record has, because it's a much slower track and like it's one of the weaker tracks on the album.
Yeah, even among the slower songs, it's really forgettable.
It's one that where maybe this is an album where maybe the sequencing could do a little shuffling. Like I would definitely put Auto Sleeper and Treasure on the back end of the album instead of right towards the beginning and middle, because I think the back half of the album is stronger. Yeah, I would resequence this whole record. I mean, I would still keep Breather and Pearl at number 1 and 2, but yeah, I would maybe bring Falling Down up, or If You Want Me, or something more further up. Yeah. All right. Well, if you're ready, we'll talk about our EP.
Sure.
All right. So we got number 59 on the EP charts, and it is Lush and their album Blind Spot. As well. This was released on April 15th of 2016 on Edamame Records. It's their first release of new material since 1996. They reunited briefly in 2015, and through 2016 they played some shows. The person on this record is Philip King on bass, Justin Welch on drums, Emma Anderson on guitar and vocals, and Mickey Berenyi on guitar and vocals. Philip King was also the touring bassist for the Jesus and Mary Chain, and Justin Welch previously played in Elastica. This record was produced by Jim Abbas and Daniel Hunt, and Jim Abbas has produced records by the Arctic Monkeys, Mono, Placebo, and Adele, and Daniel Hunt is from the group Ladytron. So, what did you think of this EP?
I enjoyed it. It doesn't sound like it was made in 2016.
Mm-mm.
I saw a lot of reviews, people saying they very easily could have, these could have easily been like leftover songs.
Yeah, when
unreleased material. I mean, it really sounds like Lush in 1996.
When we were talking about this, you sent me a message. And you're like, this came out in 2016, and I was like, no, that's a reissue date. No, it did come out in 2016. I don't know why I thought it was a reissue. I assumed based on the artwork and how it sounded that it was like an older album that just got a reissue, and that it wasn't until I like looked at like the Discogs and the Wikipedia page for this record, I was like, shit, this did come out only 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. it's amazing how they were able to sound basically exactly the same.
Yeah, I really like Lush.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of slept on them. They're one of those bands that I thought was more of like an also-ran, and they weren't very good, like Drop 19s or the Swirlies, but hey. I heard some kind of randomly and was like, whoa, this is really good. Why have I not listened to them? And I've listened to a little bit more in the last couple of months. Again, they're a little bit of an outlier, especially their later material. Their last record, you wouldn't even call a shoegaze record. I mean, it's definitely Britpop. But I do think that they carried a lot of their dream pop. You know, there's a lot of like Cocteau Twins sounding stuff. And I feel like they did carry that through their whole discography. But
yeah, my initial reaction was to like more tie them in with like Slow Dive style shoegaze. But yeah, they definitely have a much stronger dream pop element. And I don't know if that's just an extension of their later sound, or because I didn't dive too deep on their previous albums, because they have like quite a few actually. There are what, four from the 90s?
Three full lengths.
And then a couple EPs that are
some EPs, yeah,
worth listening to. So it's and I love these album covers. Like the Lush's album covers are like my favorite time period, like of like 90s artwork. It's just this very, you see that album cover and you go, this came out in 1991. Like there's no mistaking when these albums were released based on their artwork.
Yeah, they are ultra 90s.
Yeah, which I love.
Their logo is like, at least on their last record, it's like, I don't even know what to compare it to. It's like Spice Girls. Like, it's just bubble letters and like circles.
Yeah.
And, like,
there's circles on all their album covers. Like, it's.
And all their records have these like sort of collage-y, but completely random and really colorful. Like, the second album, Split, it's got lemons on it. Why? Just lemons.
That album artwork definitely reminds me of the Morella's Forest music video for Hangout. I think it's what song it was. I just love like these like not really like primary colors, almost big. I don't know. It is collage work, I guess, but I don't know. I love this kind of artwork. It's
well. So you mentioned Morella's Forest. That's actually probably a great comparison. Of course. It's the more obscure comparison.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's the one we grew up with.
Yeah. Morella's Forest were on Tooth & Nail Records, as well as, I guess that's primarily what they released most of their music on. They started as a shoegaze band, kind of went into like a noise pop direction, had a lot of dreamy elements, obscure group, but they released three really great records. Super Deluxe, Ultraphonic Hiss, and From Dayton with Love. Or I actually even have another one, Tiny Lights of Heaven in 2002. But yeah, they kind of do. I'm sure they considered them an influence. I'm sure Morella's Forest considered Lush an influence, because their first record didn't come out until 95. So
people make a lot of comparisons to the Cocteau Twins with early Lush material. And you and I have talked about this before, but Cocteau Twins are really boring.
I think they have some really, really great songs, but their albums are too long.
Yeah, I do think their albums probably average about two good songs a piece.
Yeah.
And very little of it. is memorable.
Well, because so much of it sounds the same, too. Like, it's very... Oh, ethereal vocals over some simple plinking guitar? Okay. Oh, lots of effects. Oh, okay. Like, they're one of those, like, good bands that I like that I don't want to listen to. You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
This EP is only 4 tracks long, but most of these tracks are probably even better than the Chapter House songs. Like the opening track, Out of Control, there's Burnham Beaches has like the doot doot doos on it, and horns even?
Yeah.
That was my favorite song on the whole album.
Oh, that reminds me. I heard a little bit of a later Ride record. One of their later 90s records, and there is like a ska horn section on it. I was just like, what is happening?
Well, it was the late 90s. Everybody had horns. Right.
But yeah, Lush did this in 2016, and they haven't done anything else since, really.
No. So I think they basically just, have their lives, as far as like probably married with kids and all that kind of stuff. So I think the only one that, like, really had a music career was a Philip, who basically became the twang bassist for Jesus and Mary Chain. I was wondering if he actually played on any of the albums, but I don't think he did. The only thing he shows up on is like live records. And then Justin Welch, they brought in to play on this EP because he was not an original member of the band, because their original member passed away in 96, which is the reason why they broke up. So yeah, I don't think the other, like, Emma and Mickey really did much else. They may have some other credits to their name, but they're not, like, well-known releases.
Mickey is in a band called Perushka, who released an album in 2019.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, I think that features Justin Welch from this EP on it.
Yes.
So they made a connection there. Yeah, she's got other things. Like, Emma's got listings for a group called Sing Sing, 2001, 2005. I don't think they're as well known, though. Like, I don't think these groups took off the way Lush did. And I don't know how active they were. I did read on, I believe it was Wikipedia, where Bob Mould was apparently approached to produce one of their albums. And he turned it down, saying he kept picking the wrong girls' songs, is what he said. So, like, there's two women in the band, Mickey and Emma, and I think one is the primary songwriter, but I guess that means Bob was choosing the other one's songs over. And so he was just like, I can't do this, and, like, stepped out of the project. It's interesting. I guess he was like, oh, if I wind up picking the wrong songs, I'm going to create some issues in this group. I don't know.
Yeah.
He said, I had to get out before I broke up the band. It's like a Spin article. Let's see if I can... I want to find, like, the full context of that article. I think I found the article.
It says, I get a lot of offers from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I was supposed to do the latest Lush album, but I had to back out because they sent me a tape of all the material, and I kept choosing the wrong girl's songs. I had to get out before I broke up the band. Crosby, Stills, and Nash?
Wanted Bob Mould to produce? Bob Mould's not even really known for his producing.
This is from Spin, October 1994, with Tori Amos on the cover.
Tori Amos.
Amos.
That's funny. I like the idea of picking the wrong person's songs.
Damn, wow. They listed him by name on the front page.
The cover?
On the cover. It also features, this issue, it features The Offspring.
Yeah,
Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah.
L7.
Black Flag.
The Jesus
Fears.
Lizard.
You see that? Black Flag in the top corner. Black Flag Years by Henry Rollins.
You might read this issue. It's on Google Books.
Yeah. Eric Bogosian from Uncut Gems? What were they talking to him about in 1995? This is pre-Law and Order.
I'm looking. I love the ads in this.
Yeah.
They're so great. They're so. Speaking of 90s design, like I am looking at an advertisement of three men standing in their boxers in a black and white picture on like a white, super white background. And there's like brackets, not your basic, with no spaces. And then the next page, which I'm guessing this was like a spread, the next page is a man with no shirt on, wearing some straight leg, silver tab Levi's jeans, and in brackets it says, Jean. It's just, I love it.
There's a half page ad for Sugar's File Under Easy Listening in here, and under it says, the new album, produced by Bob Mould. I was like, he did more than produce it. This is, wow, I just want to go through this issue of Spin now. I'll link this in the notes because this is fun. You should go look at this. It's like a fun little time capsule.
I mean, this is right up my alley.
Yeah.
I look at old magazines on like Google Books and Archive all the time. So I love this. And it's so frustrating. So many magazines don't keep their archive issues online in an accessible way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like no one's going to pay to subscribe to your magazine to read old issues.
Yeah.
Put them in a library. Anyway.
Yeah.
I love these Levi's ads. These are so good.
We need a YouTube channel. Well, what would you give this EP ratings wise?
I would also give it probably about a 3.75.
I'm gonna give it a 4.25.
Wow.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this. But anyway, you can continue your thought.
It's really enjoyable to listen to. I just don't think it's as memorable as their earlier material. I think it was a very serviceable reunion record. I think it's probably better than like some of the Ride stuff that's come out lately. And like I heard something by Ride that was released in like the last couple of years that sounded like chill beats and like
a study,
just generic indie rock
Spotify study mix,
like music that you would hear in like a boutique in like Silver Lake, and just like, oh, this is pleasant background sounds. But
yeah, I don't know, I really enjoyed, especially like Out of Control and Burnham Beaches, and even the song Lost Boy was really good. It had a little bit of like that Twin Peaksy sort of soundtracky vibe. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought the weakest track was the last one, Rosebud, but even then I thought it was solid. Yeah. So our new question that we ask at the end of every episode. So you get into a time machine. This one's gonna be a little weirder because normally they're from the same year, but you can get into a time machine and you can go back to either 1991 and see Chapter House live, or you can get in a time machine and go all the way back to 2016 and see one of these Lush reunions. That's your choices. Which would you rather see?
I'm going to go with Chapter House. I think it'd be more interesting experience culturally to see what the audience was like at a Chapter House show in 1991.
Yeah, that's what I would pick too. Because you would be going back to the boom period of shoegaze. This time machine has spatial movement, so we'll say you can go to England and do it too. So, because I don't know if they even toured the United States in 91. Yeah, because like I would be much more interested in seeing what shoegaze was like in 91 versus what a shoegaze reunion is like in 2016. Like, I've seen shoegaze in 2016.
Yeah, I know what the crowd looks like at the 2016 Lush show. Like, it's lots of horn-rimmed glasses,
mm-hmm.
men in hats.
Hiding their receding hairlines.
Hey, now.
Hey, oh, no, I'm right there with you. Hey, brother, I'm right there with you.
Just, like, layered clothing, like a cool jacket, button-up shirt, blue jeans. My whole look.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Your image.
Just don't have glasses.
Yeah.
It's
fine.
Yeah, it's the audience at the Teenage Fan Club show that I went to.
Yeah, very much.
So.
Yeah. I mean, but if, now let's say you could see Lush in 91, I'd probably go see Lush in 91. That's not what I'm asking here, though, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, well, cool. Well, next week, let me pull that up. Next, quote unquote, next week. Next week, we are talking the year 2010, and we got number 90 on the album charts, and it is Tiger's Jaw, Two Worlds, and our EP is number 189, and it is Lemuria, Chautauqua County. So, okay, I'm spoiler alert, whatever, I don't care. We recorded that one before this one, so we've already done that one, and it's one of my favorites we've done this year, so I'm really looking forward to y'all hearing that one. But I guess that'll do it for this week. I don't know what our sample is going to be on the outro.
Hmm.
Some Levi's ad. That'll be it.
Yeah.
All right.
What the hell is this?
It's a Kisses Make Me Boogie-O-Lantern. Kiss it and make it boogie.
Kiss it.
Maybe later.